What is the value on buildings? It's NOI divided by cap rate. I'm going to increase my cap rate because remember, increasing the cap rate, what does it do to values? It drops them. So I increase my cap rate so that I know a conservative value.
Welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab, where your host, Dave Lindahl, dissects recent multifamily deals done by his guests. Dave will extract what went right, what went wrong, and a number of key takeaways so your next deal may be more profitable.
Welcome to this edition of Multifamily Deal Lab, where we dissect deals from start to finish. I'm your host, Dave Lindahl, and my guest today is Jose Bellman. Jose, tell everybody who you are and where you're from.
So my name is Jose. Nice to have you all here. I'm from Salinas, California. And if you don't know where Salinas is, that is, it's in Central Coast. We are literally in the central between Los Angeles and the Bay Area. And if, again, you don't know an idea where that is, it's, let's say, Monterey, California. If you're a car fanatic, we have Car Week here yearly. And we're known by the salad bowl, meaning that everything in terms of vegetables, it gets distributed literally from our area. So all that lettuce you eat, you could just think about me and the city. This is where we're from. I'm not the lettuce man, but at least you get an idea now.
So Jose, how long ago did you start with RE Mentor?
Yeah, so I was sharing it on the weekend. You know, a lot of really cool people. I was at a conference speaking, and there was a gal who approached me in September 2017, and she shared with me your book called Emerging Markets. And she said, you know, Jose, you got to read this book, and et cetera, et cetera. And I said, okay, I'll give it a shot. And then next thing you know, I ended up reading it in Thanksgiving because that was more quiet time that week where really anything's going on. So I said, well, let me read this book and just see who David is. And honestly, that's where he really started. And then I think I was just curious. And then I gave a call to your office. I think it was like in December. And they're like, yeah, you should come to this multifamily boot camp or someplace of that nature. And I met a few people and I ended up joining, I think it was January 2018. And okay, Things took off from there.
Yeah. So this is the thing. Most people that are on the West Coast or in Boston, New York City, they always come back and say, oh, I can't find anything that cash flows. We all know it's relationship based. Based in San Francisco, one of the tightest markets, it has rent control. Usually when people in San Francisco, they actually go to Oakland or they go a little bit farther out in order to get deals that pencil out. But Jose started right away doing deals in San Francisco proper. Mm-hmm. And so whenever somebody would say to me, oh, I'm from the West Coast, does the cash flow? I say, oh yeah, talk to Jose Bellman.
Yeah.
Talk to everybody how you like broke in into that market.
Yeah, and it's fascinating to talk about this because I think this flows to everybody. I think, yeah, students, sponsors, and I think, yeah, even sponsors, I think, because the mentality of knowing that there's no shortage of money, that's really the answer I could give you as long as you have a really good property. Now, a good property for people in Texas, if I show them in California, let's say that's not a good property. But if I show them a property to somebody in Silicon Valley, and they are willing to take a certain percentage in equity on the exit, for them, it may just work. Now, I was answering this question at the Q&A on the weekend and to some of the students and sponsors is, it's the type of profile of investor that you're talking to. I'll give you an example. If every day we have two tasks as students and investors is you are looking to have relationships with brokers or realtors or anybody that's going to bring you business. And then the other task, and this should be a habit, is start looking always for investors regardless, because you may be shortage. Now, the investors that you talk to, you need to evaluate them. What is their risk tolerance? Where do they want to be at? I want to stay in the Bay Area just because it's closer. Okay. Would you be okay paying if I buy a building of this case for this price at this cap rate and this pro forma? And this is the amount of rents. Are you okay with that? And you got to start feeling them in. Not everybody wants to invest out of California. I'm not saying that California is not a good market. There's enough business all over. So really the answer on that is the criteria and the willingness to ask as many investors until you get that right investor. One of the ways that I always tell everybody is saying, if you had a billionaire that says, hey, all I want is a 5% annual return, can you find deals? I think I can, right? So it's really that investor that is capable.
Yeah. And there's so many different types of investors out there. So you match the investor to the deal. You use investors as your ammunition. You classify them inside of your contact management software. And then when the right deal comes along for the right investor group, you put them both together and you move forward. But what about, how did you find the deal? You know, investors, I think it's universal on how you bring them on board. But when you're in really tight markets like you were in, how did you break through and get that first deal?
So a little background, because a lot of the students, just not to bore you, because some of you may think this is a long journey and it's a marathon, like we call it, right? It's the marathon until forever. This is your lifestyle. But I've been doing the business at a really young age, but there was always a lot of learning lessons, and I don't want to dive into it because it'll drag out this call. But the way how I broke into that deal, one is just having that ability and making those phone calls and knowing that a lot of no's are going to happen and that 10th or 20th no, that next one will be there. Now, you got to be really honest with yourself of what you're looking for. Meaning, if I'm only looking for vacant buildings, a lot of people are going to tell you they don't exist. That's not possible. They're going to say, well, that only happens in certain markets. They really do exist. It's a momentum builder. When the broker brought me the first deal, David, in terms of something of this nature, vacant, right? A vacant building. It's kind of like what we call this, like if I focus on a Tesla every day and I buy a Tesla, all I see is Teslas. Like that's all I've been focusing on. And when I started focusing on that and I was only getting vacant buildings, all I would see is a lot of vacant buildings. I was getting a lot of them. I wasn't even focusing on anything else. I was just focusing on, give me this type of property and every broker. And then it was just building momentum. The broker that got me this deal, which we're going to talk about right now, was off market. He knew the seller. He told me that he was looking for a buyer that was willing to take on this risk, that had that execution performance. And it just happens to be a match date on there. This broker took me maybe 2 years per se, because let's be honest, he didn't know me. He's a Marcus and Millchap broker. And he said, let's look and see how you evaluate deals, how you put the offer. And he started noticing that my language, when I talk per door, CapEx, performas, the language, I was talking the lingo, he was taking me seriously. And I think at that point, it was moving faster.
Yeah, 2 years is still a long haul. What did you do in those 2 years? How often did you contact? What type of contacts did you have? Did you use commonality?
A lot of it is really commonality.
Explain to everybody what that is.
Commonality is, let's say as an example, David here is Marcus and Millchap and the broker. Commonality is like a very genuine conversation with David as the broker. And I will ask David, you know, what is it that you do when you're not doing real estate? And maybe he'll say, I like to watch sports as an example.
Or in reality, I like to read business books, because that's the one thing you and I both have in common.
Yeah.
And we share that on a regular basis.
Yeah, exactly. And so in the Bay Area, you got the Oakland A's, you got the Oakland Raiders and all that stuff. And there's a lot we talk about on that weekend. But that's one area. Another area is I also research my brokers, who they are. I connect with them on social media and I see what they like. And usually, to be really direct with you, David, is I really only work with people I really like and we have commonality genuinely, because otherwise you're in a bad marriage. I mean, you're only doing business because of the money and that doesn't last long. It's just more of a business dry conversation. And I like to really know them on a personal level. All the brokers I work with now, we talk on a regular basis. Even if we're not doing business, we talk about how was your Thanksgiving? How was your New Year's, Jose? What's your criteria this year? Is anything changing? And then we talk about, because I have a little girl and they have children too, we talk about, hey, my little girl's being a little bit too like running around and I'm trying to teach her this. And what's next for me? He goes, Jose, there's no plan. You just kind of keep going. That's just kind of the conversations.
Yeah. You know, I just want to go back to commonality like you're talking about, but how you can use it not only with broker relationships, but you can use it with private money relationships. You can use it with any relationship. And as a matter of fact, that's how our relationship blossomed, in the sense that I'm not teaching the events anymore other than Insiders Club and I'm at Ultimate Partnering. So in order to get to me, you either have to call directly for me or somehow there's some correspondence starts. And I can't remember the first correspondence that we had, but eventually we started talking about business books. So yeah. Then you would email me and say, hey, what are you reading? This is what I'm reading. And I'll say, hey, this is what I'm reading. We still do it. You know, we've been doing it now for about 3 or 4 years. Yeah. And when you got to Insiders Club, you said to me, what are you reading? And I said, at the time, I was so much going in my brain. I said, wait a minute, I'll go up to my room and I'll take the pictures of the two books that I'm reading right now and I'll send it to you, which I did. But also during that time frame, I also remember when you were having your baby and you said to me, I'm having a baby. And I was like, wow, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And you're like, give me advice. Tell me about it. And I get young kids. Anybody that's been through the process is happy to like, okay, this is what you're in for. Or yeah, I've read 14 baby books. I refer to the three best baby books that I had read. And commonality is what binds people together.
And I'll just let me add one more thing, David, because this is one key thing is you got to be yourself. Other people could tell if you're not genuine, they'll know like right off the bat. I talk to a lot of people and the people that know me in my circle, they'll know this is who Jose is, meaning that I'm not too serious. I have certain standards, but they need to just be yourself because I think sometimes real estate or industry, sometimes they put labels and they put a lot of tags that this is the way it is. And sometimes you have to have that other personality. It's just being yourself and also the broker, they'll know like this is genuine, the person that's looking for, and they know that you know what you're doing, but you're maybe not be experienced. Other than that, they'll catch on it and then they won't work with you. It'll just add a little bit of a challenge.
Mm, absolutely. All right. So this 31 unit deal, it was off market. Broker gives it to you. What was the occupancy?
Zero.
Oh, so this is a vacant property. What number deal is this for you?
Respectfully, David, I should keep track on it, but I don't know. I mean, it's up there. I'm just going to, in my mind, I think this is probably number, it's up there in the 40s, maybe.
Okay. So I just wanted to qualify that because somebody that's doing a 31 unit vacant deal shouldn't be doing it if it's your first couple of deals, unless you're partnering with somebody that knows how to do it.
Yeah.
That's a really important message to get across to everybody. So what are you looking for when you go into a vacant property? Why was it a vacant number? What was the problem? I know the two questions you need to ask. What was the problem? Can I solve the problem?
Yeah.
So what was it here?
The problem is the owner had it already vacant for 4 years. He was running low on cash. He did have a loan on it already. He thought he could fix it on his own and stabilize it. And so everything was already dominoing on his other portfolio. And the solution was to bring in somebody that's capable and has the liquid and has the experience. So the broker brought it to me and I met the owner, actually. We met at the building. And I think that's also very important. I asked him, hey, bring the owner on there so that we could remove any vague answers. He could just tell me anything that needs to be done. And to be frank with you, I think that really sealed the deal because he really wanted to meet the buyer too. And he wanted to really get understanding, you know, what did you do? What are you buying? And he wanted to find some credibility too. And we signed the agreement, I think 5 days later, with a few papers back and forth with attorneys and documentation. Yeah, there was a formal LOI, but it didn't go that far. It was just maybe 48 hours after that we were ratifying. So it was really the knowing the lingo and talk of this property.
So you got a vacant property, it's 31 units. How do you determine what you're going to pay for that property?
Yeah, good question. So how do we know values today, right? You got to reverse engineer this question because if it's vacant, right, there's no cash flow, it needs a lot of work and all that stuff. So what do we do when there's occupied properties? We look at what the existing cash flow and what's the remaining added value. And that gives you your pro forma, right? Pro forma, not actuals, pro forma on what the property will perform on year 4, 5, 3, or any year you're thinking of exit. Every time I look at a property, David, and everybody else I'm sharing with this, I always look at what's my exit on here right away. If I see this property, what's my exit on this? Why are you going in here, Jose? Are you going for the cash flow or you're trying to exit after certain years in cash flow or you're just trying to exit and renovate? Those are the typical exits right there. So the pro forma is I got 31 units, which is 31 units. I looked at what the market rents are today, right? Just today. On those units and if they were renovated. Hypothetically, all 31 units, just to make a number, 1,000 a piece, right? We're just doing the math really basic. Now, remember, it's been vacant for 3 to 4 years. So where in the world is the water? Where in the world is the gas bill? Where's the garbage? Where's the management fee? All those factors are very important, right? We know the income is there. Now, can things change in a year? Yes. Can it take you a year to get it all done? Yes. So I get today's rent, and instead of me going higher, I go lower. I deduct my pro forma rents at least 30% off. Why? Because I want to hedge on if the market were to change, right? So if I'm getting 1,000, I'm forecasting 700. pro forma. You understand? I'm sorry if I'm being really technical, really fast, but...
No. I know how long it takes to answer this question. Usually when I do a training on it, it's over the 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Just to answer that question alone. So keep going.
All right. Okay. So deduct 30% off that. Again, I'm hedging my risk. I have the pro forma income only. We're already done there, right? Now, the underwriting that you all have has a standard CapEx per door. I keep that as a CapEx, although all of them are going to be renovated, right? We want to keep that CapEx. You don't take a shortcut on that. Your underwriting has an insurance amount. And I'm talking on my situation. Since I already know the insurance cost on that area, because I already have a portfolio, all I did is I called my broker. He gave me an actual bid right away. But if you don't have that, use the underwriting. And you may want to increase the expenses that you have on that underwriting just a little bit more, just to be safe. Again, you're playing conservative. At that point, you have your NOI. And then you ask your broker and you say, hey, his name is Ben. He's a good friend of mine now at this age of career. Ben, if I sell this building in the next 6 months, what's going to be my cap rate that I should be shooting for, right? Because what is the value on buildings? It's NOI divided by cap rate, right? That's going to give you your value. I don't know who asked the question. You get the NOI divided by the cap rate. Now, can the cap rates change? Yes. What am I going to do? I'm going to increase my cap rate, because remember, increasing the cap rate, what does it do to values? It drops them, right? So I increase my cap rate so that I know a conservative value. Did that make sense, David? Yeah. I increase my cap rate so that
especially when you're buying.
Yeah. You don't want to be too optimistic. You're going to get bitten in the tail by thinking too optimistic, right? Because I'm using the investor's money. These guys are going to say, Jose, what did you do to prevent this? Here's what I did. Here's what I did. Because these questions, investors are going to ask this question. How did you determine this, Jose? How did you determine the split? How did you determine the profit? What are the suggestions and the information your broker gave to you so you could exit out? Can you show that to me? So I have to have all that ready before they even ask that question. By the time I'm done presenting, that's very too little questions. Not that I don't expect them, but a lot of the objections were answered in that presentation, if I could say it that way. And that is a very skillful raising capital right there. So I do the reverse engineering, and I'm going to transition to something really quick, David. This property is not for cash flow, you guys. It will cash flow really nice, but I have a different plan. This is going to be an easy in, easy out.
Why did you choose that exit?
Good question. I was sharing this with some of the students on the weekend. This property is a C location, C property. Okay. So C properties have a lot of work throughout the years. That's just the nature of a C property. Your expenses, CapEx are a little higher throughout the years.
Let me just clarify that. Because of the age of the building. Things break down on a regular basis.
So what I'm going to do, and the reason is this is all about my forecast on the market, as we were talking about in the weekend, is this is my vision. Remember, this is just my vision of what I see and where I want to go. I want to get my chips, I call it the profits, and I want to go buy an A building, A type A building, brand new, under 10 years old. Why? Number one, better tenant quality, better location, it's price premium, and that's going to be my long-term property. That's my legacy, like building portfolio. I want it next to Whole Foods. I want it next to the areas just like Austin, that area. That's phenomenal. But those have come with the high premium, 4-5% annual. And I'm okay with that. So that's my plan. As everybody should have your own plan. What's the game plan here, right? So that was my exit from day one on that property. Does that make sense, David?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. So I got to go into lightning round because we're running out of time. I want you to just talk about another way to go after. It's actually the same way, different angle, going after a vacant building, which is basically, if you want to take what Jose said and break it down to a formula, an easily digestible formula, what you do is on the vacant properties, you determine what the break-even point of the property is. That's really important because you need to know when you're going to start cash flowing. Then you determine what the price is going to be at 85% occupancy. So 85% occupancy is equilibrium. That's when you're going to get your conventional financing. Mm-hmm. So typically what I'll do is I'll take that price and then I'll multiply it by 30%, right? There's your 30%, or multiply it by 70%. And that gives me the price I'm going to offer, because if I'm going to take that risk, the amount of risk that it takes to redevelop one of these properties, then I want a big reward on the back end. So that right there is a very simple formula on how to do that. Break even, what's the price at 85% occupancy, and then discount that by 30%. Mm-hmm. All right, I just want to do one more thing before we go into lightning round, and that is, first of all, I want to put a plug in. If we teach a lot of people how to be active investors, we also do deals ourselves. And if you just want to be a passive investor and you want to look at what we're doing for deals, go to passivefornow.com. You can sign up and you'll be exposed to what we're doing in the marketplace right now. So I see on the sheet that it was offered for 1.6 million. You got it for 1.3 million. How did you get the 300,000 delta?
Right. So I'm a discount buyer. Let's call it that way. I usually want to make an offer. The strategy, I think I should have shared this on that. I feel a little guilty now here, David. I should have shared a way how to negotiate. Maybe I forgot, but you got to offer a price that you're so nervous to offer. So if you're not nervous enough of making that offer, you're not offering low enough yet.
If you aren't embarrassed to offer that price, you aren't low enough yet.
If you're thinking, oh, I think he's going to like this offer, then you're overpaying. I'm going to tell you mentally wise already, you're going to get knocked off.
So what was your initial offer on this deal?
$850.
$850?
Heck yeah.
Nice.
No, I'm serious. $850.
Oh, I believe you. How did you justify that with a seller?
I'll be really frank with you. There was no justification. It was really going really far. It was a mentality, psychological way of saying, hey, and the reason why I came like that, I guess this is a justification, is because number one, exclusivity of a buyer. I'm coming in as an exclusive buyer off market. I know what I'm doing, right? So I got the money, it's ready to go. And we close in 30 days, by the way. And I said, hey, you needed to get out. You got to know the pain points on this deal. You need to know where the seller's at. Where is he at? You need to know all this stuff. And if you ask more questions instead, you'll get everything you need to know. So I said, hey, his name is Wally. Wally, I got you an offer, but I don't want you to fall off your chair, okay? And he's like, well, what is it? Just lay it on me. I said, it's $850. What do you want to do next? That's all I said. What do you want to do next?
I have two questions first. Uh-huh. Number one, does the seller have a brother named the Beaver?
I don't know, but they seem to have a lot.
Anybody that's up around my age knows what I'm talking about. And then number two, what was your strike price? You went in at $850, but what was your strike price? What was the price you would not go over?
It was actually 1.5. I was way under that, but I told him, he says, hey, it's $850. I'm throwing you the control. I'm ready to close. What do you want to do next? He says, no, get out of here, Jose. You want me to give it to you? And I remember he said that. And I said, no, I'm not looking to take it away from you. You asked me to make you an offer. This is what it would work for me. I don't want to belly up on this. And so he came back, goes, Jose, we really minimal need to be at the 1 million area. 1 million area. So what did he tell me? He already told me where he needs to be at. So I said, okay, well, would you take right off the call? No, not to play games, 1.1, and we could call it a day. I knew my price. And he goes, well, at least I want you to meet me at 1.4. There you go. He says, let's call it a day at 1.360. And he goes, yeah, done. And that was it right there.
Oh, sweet. That went pretty quick.
That wasn't that quick. It took like 5 days.
Oh, all right. So we're going to go into lightning round. I'm going to ask you a series of questions. You just answer whatever comes off the top of your head.
Go for it.
Number one, if you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Time.
Time?
I'd like to have more than 24 hours.
Oh, you would like to decrease the speed of time?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your favorite car?
Bugatti.
And on a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you at live presentations?
Confidently 10 now.
What were you when you first started?
1 or 2. I'll be frank with you. It was not easy.
Yeah, it never is. Do you believe in love at first sight?
Yes.
How many cups of coffee do you drink a day?
You just talked about that. Now 1.
What's your favorite type of muffin?
Banana.
And if a deaf person goes to court, is a steal called a hearing?
Yeah. He has to figure somebody to go into the end.
That's a paradox.
I know.
All right, awesome. This was another episode of Multifamily Deal Lab. Come see us next week, same time, same place, and we will dissect another deal. Thank you, Jose.
Thank you, David. Thank you, everybody.
This has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. If watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit the like button, the subscribe button, so you don't miss the next session, and review the contact links on this page.